I'd like to introduce Peter Anthony.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Before I go into my story, I've been traveling around the country since 2009, sharing my near-death experience, and I came on board the IANS group in Los Angeles, I think it was 2013, so for me, this IANS group is relatively new, so I was traveling and sharing my story before, and I must say that this group has been amazing. I was sharing with Craig earlier today, Salt Lake City was my very first city to do a lecture here about my near-death experience. And actually, I only had 3 chapters at that time in the early 2000s, and they were so excited to hear my story because of my television background, and I had worked with Mary Kay herself, from Mary Kay Cosmetics, and they were the ones who brought me in to listen to my story. So for me, this has come full circle. So I am thrilled that you're here tonight. I love this city. This is my second time around, and it's just been amazing. So before I start into the story, I always try to find someone in the auditorium that I can connect with, do the exchange of energy, and it's going to be you. So I'm going to grab your hands. You can just sit there, and I'm just going to say a prayer, and I want you to do the same thing. And what I ask for is that whatever message comes through me tonight comes from that above, okay? And you can say whatever you want in terms of prayer if you do believe in prayer, okay? Thank you so much. Okay. Let me give you a little bit of background about who I was before this near-death experience. Now, I was born and raised Catholic, and by the time I got to my early 20s, I lost the majority of my family, brothers, sisters, mother, father, nieces, nephews. So in my world at that time, born and raised Catholic, my world of thinking was, how can, if there is this thing called God, taken away an entire family? So at the age of 21, it became just me. And so my view of God, religion, went in the opposite direction to believing in nothing. You work, you make money, you die, end of story. And I basically put behind me all the teachings of my Catholic upbringing. I stuttered. I was an introvert. I was an amazing artist. By the time I was 17, I received an art scholarship from the Will Rogers Institute for the Art. My goal back in the 80s was to work on special effects. I wanted to become a special effects makeup artist. Leviathan and Aliens and the Terminator franchise. All these science fiction movies were out, and this was like the consciousness of that time. And because I was such a skilled artist, I could build, I could sculpt, I could paint, I could sketch, I could do portraits. I could just take anything from dirt and turn it into something. That was my background. And so this was my calling. And as my career began to evolve in terms of my studies, and of course in our industry, in order to go into our industry in terms of film instead of for special effects, you have to go into the union, these things that are necessary. Because I was new kid on block, it was a very difficult time for me to get into the union, and no one was supporting this. I got a phone call from CBS, and they had heard about my skills as a makeup artist, and they wanted to know if I would consider becoming an image consultant for CBS. This time I'd worked with Audience Research Development Center, where I had a background in terms of, because I was going into film, how to dress characters. So I had this amazing background in terms of dressing people, kids, men, women. I knew what they should look like on camera. So CBS got wind of this. They did an interview with me, and they said, we want you to work for us. I said, well, you know, I'm not really interested in CBS. I want to get into special effects. At this time, Diane Sawyer was with CBS. Dan Rather, of course, was with CBS. And they said, you're going to get the chance to work with some amazing people here. And I said, I just don't want to do it. I turned this down 6 or 7 times before they convinced me. She said, you know what, this can change your career. And after this gig is up, you're in the union, and you can go on to become a special effects makeup artist. So I went in to work with Dan Rather, Leslie Stahl from Face the Nation. I went from the news division to episodic, working with Linda Gray from Dallas, Debbie Allen, Shirley MacLaine, who was at that time an Academy Award winner, Greer Garson, who won the Academy Award for Mrs. Miniverre. My career was launching as an image consultant for CBS. And in the middle of all this, what called being the It Boy, back in June of 1987, now I was having a horrendous schedule because, again, as an image consultant, you know, you're working with celebrities, I had no days off. If there was Thanksgiving, that was the Macy's Parade. If it was the Oscars or the Golden Globes, I was busy. So if I had any time off, it usually was a half day on Sunday. Perhaps that Sunday was spent traveling. So my whole career was based on, at that time, my celebrity schedules and what they were doing, and also what was going on in the news division. So travel, travel, travel. And what happened to me was I became ill. My illness, I went into the doctor, and at this time I began to slightly bleed. I was coughing. I had cramps in my stomach. At this time, I didn't know that I had Crohn's disease. At the time, I didn't know that I had tuberculosis. During this time, we were in the middle of the AIDS epidemic. And as I was traveling all around the nation, I began to see designers and actors and Broadway actors and movie stars I'd work with pass. And so back in the 80s, the AIDS epidemic had reached that time where we didn't know how you got AIDS. You could walk into the room and boom, you got AIDS. So there was this fear in our consciousness at that time. I'm going to the doctor, and in the back of my mind, oh my God, do I have AIDS? That's what I was thinking. As I began to lose weight, this is in June, I began to bleed even more in July. I lost maybe 20 pounds, and I began to get these brown lesions on my face and on my chest. So rather than me keeping my appointments with the doctor, again, at that time, there was so much hype in the media about AIDS, I became obsessed with fear, thinking that I was going to die. And I was with CBS News, and I thought, if I go in and talk about this, I'm going to lose my job and my insurance. So I kept it quiet. Losing weight. By August, another maybe 10, 15 pounds. By the time September came around, I was putting newspaper and Kleenex in my suit, in my shoes. I was double layering my clothes so you could not tell that I was losing weight. And because I was a skilled makeup artist, I started using special effects makeup on my face and on my torso so you could not see the brown lesions on my face. And the doctor kept calling, we need you in, we need you in, and I wouldn't do it. I was so afraid to go to the doctor because I knew at that time if I went in, there was my sentence. So I avoided it. We did a wrap party in November. I was finishing up on a series at the time. And my birthday is the 15th of November. And we were wrapping up on this television series on November the 11th. And so the production crew, decided to give me a special birthday send-off, and everyone was going back to their locations, to their city of choice. And while I was about to blow out the candles, this pain just overtook my side. And I could just feel as though someone was just kicking my stomach. I excused myself, and I went into the restroom, and I just started bleeding. Just started bleeding. And I started coughing, and I couldn't stop what I was doing. And I walked in, I cleaned myself off, I told someone there at the door, I said, just tell them I'm going home, I'm not feeling well. And I went back to my condo, and as soon as I walked in the door, I toppled to the ground. I had to call a friend of mine, and I said, there's something terribly wrong with me. I think I have to go to the hospital. The pain was so unbearable, I was coughing up blood, and my suit was just saturated in blood. So when my friend showed up, his name was TJ, if you buy the book, you'll read about TJ. When he showed up, he saw the puddle of blood from the front door all the way into the bedroom. And I didn't know at the time, but we decided to take some thrift clothes in the corner of the room. It was in a box to go into the Goodwill. And rather than me going in my nice clothes, I decided to go in and put some thrift clothes on. So I put some tattered jeans on and a flannel shirt, and I looked terrible. And not realizing, when we went to the hospital, the makeup had worn off my face. So you could see the brown lesions on my face. You could see through the flannel shirt the brown lesions on my torso. And as I stepped into the hospital, and TJ was trying to admit me into the hospital, the nurses looked at me, and they would not admit me. Back then, Just like you go back a year and a half ago, remember when the Ebola plague came around and all the medical crew was afraid to come near? The medical crew was freaking out. And so the men and clerk went over to a nurse and said, "We've got to get this guy. No one wanted to come near me." Back then, again, we go back to that whole conscience of where people were with the AIDS virus, and it was a death sentence. So TJ threw this big fit, and he kept demanding and demanding and demanding, and just became this huge problem there in the admitting room. And I remember the admitting clerk went from nurse to nurse, and she found this young boy, and I could see her talking to this young boy. I could see this. He's just nodding his head no. This tension I could see, and I just finally collapsed to the floor. And I remember he picked me up, put me on the gurney, and there was blood everywhere. And he was suited up as though I was radioactive. And again, the pain that I was feeling, just I can't even begin to describe it. I go back to that moment, and it just felt like someone was cutting my skin, my stomach with an X-Acto knife. I could just how much pain it was. It was just unbearable. And I began to cough, and I said, "What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? What's happening to me?" I would look up, and I could see perspiration on his forehead. And I remember just the fear in his eyes looking at me, and then he stopped when I began to believe him more. And again, there was a puddle of blood, and he pushed me in a corner and left me there. So, thus the night began. Nurse after nurse passed by. I don't know what happened. I think that just the gossip of what was happening there, who I was the person that was pushed in the corner. And I would wave my hand trying to get someone's attention, and no one would come. Finally, a nurse showed up. She came up to me and she said, "What are you doing here?" And she looked down and she moved away and looked at me. And I remember this. She had her notepad with her, and she just kept moving away from me. I said, "Please, someone's got to help me. Something is wrong." I said, I think I might be dying. Please come back." And she came in closer, and she looked at me, and I reached up, and I grabbed her hand, and she moved away. I said, "Please, help me." Her name was Betty Solomon. She became my hero that night. So I get emotional because I go back to that moment. You get into that moment of where you are at that consciousness. And she said, "Okay." So she ran me down, and I'll never forget this. On November the 11th, 1987, I was rushed to cubicle number 11. And she pushed me into the cubicle with a blue drape, and she closed it, and thus the argument began. And for the first time in my life, I was social profiled. I could hear the doctors and the nurses and the medical crew, "Solomon, what are you doing? Look at this guy. He's homeless, with clothes. He's gay, and he has AIDS. And you're exposing all of us to the AIDS virus." And she couldn't get anyone to come into the room to look at me. And I remember the doctor opened up the drape, the anesthesiologist opened the drape, closed it, and left. She came back into that room. She opened up that drape. She said, "This is going to hurt. I need you to get on your side. I'm going to take these clothes off of you." She got my bloody clothes off. She threw them down on the floor. She came back. She came back with a mop and a bucket of water and sanitizer and began to scrub the floors. Again, back then, being exposed to the AIDS virus, they assumed that you get it through the blood. So she, at that point, became my hero because she did the right thing because it was the right thing to do. And she got me cleaned up, put me in a gown, and she wheeled me in the hallway, and she went into the OR room, and she started talking to the doctors. Take a back step here because from June until November the 11th, I've been bleeding for months and doing nothing about it. So think about that. If you have Crohn's disease, for those who've ever had Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, you know what you go through. And I basically was just down to nothing in terms of weight. So she convinced the doctors. They brought me into the OR. They could not keep the IVs in my arms. I had lost so much blood that my veins kept popping. And it was at this time, while they put me on the operating table, that I looked over here in this corner. I could see this rotating circle. I call it the bullseye. And this is the first time that this occurred, and I was here on the operating table, but over here I could see this rotating, I call the bullseye. And it kept rotating and rotating. I could feel as though something had attached itself to my solar plexus. I didn't know what it was. And I knew it was the drugs because they couldn't keep the IVs in and they couldn't prep me for surgery. And as I looked again, this is where my whole life began to change yet again. I looked over to this tunnel and I could see people that I recognized, but not my sister, not my brother, not my father, not my grandparents. But I saw people from previous lifetimes. Think about what I just said. I saw people from previous lifetimes ago. I saw them. I recognized these people that had played a pivotal part in my life, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And there they were, summoning me, welcome me. I'm just looking, going back to the doctors. And I remember the OR doctor said, get that IV in him now. He said, I can't. His veins have collapsed. They turned me over on my side. They're about to put the IV in through the back. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, bam. There was just this whole stillness that assumed the room. And I looked over here, and I could see these souls from lifetimes ago. And this is where things begin to change. For me, what happened, I could see, and I say see, because I could see Peter Anthony here on the OR table, but as though me up here was looking down at Peter Anthony on the table. And I could feel this sense of peace coming from here. So what happened as I looked at this corner, I don't know how to describe it other than you're out of body, but you can't see yourself because I guess it's spirit, but at the same time, it's almost as though you're looking through the eye of a camera. And I began to go down this hallway, out through the OR, down the ER corridor, all the way, and by this time, my friend Nora had arrived, and they'd contacted her. And I remember as I was passing by, I remember her looking up as though she could see me, and she said, Peter Anthony, it's not your time to go. And as I went down this corridor, I went up to the 7th floor, and this is where, yet again, one of those pivotal times your consciousness began to change, and I looked back at that moment in my life. As I went up the 7th floor, and passing down the hallway, there were two police officers standing outside the room, or sitting outside of the room, I should say, and inside the room was an Hispanic man who was handcuffed to the bed. And I could see his father, who had passed, who he had just shot that night and murdered his father. And he was blaming his father for everything that had happened in his life, up to that moment that he murdered him. Here was his father telling his son, though he couldn't see him, how much he loved him. So I had this experience of seeing the spirit world for the very first time, and seeing a young boy who played victim all his life and blamed everybody for his horrible life, for all his crimes and his drug addiction. I go into great detail about what happened to me on the 7th floor, so if you do read this book, you'll find out, because I don't want to spend too much time, because I'm here for about an hour to lecture on my near death. I go down the ER corridor, back to the OR, I go back to the medical crew, and they went into panic mode. And I remember stand back, clear the paddles to my chest, and I saw my body jump, go back over here. And at this time, it felt like it was being vacuumed, is the only way I can describe it. Something attached itself here. So seeing my body here, I could feel this presence of Peter Anthony, the spirit, being sucked into this, or vacuumed into this bullseye. But this time, I saw my third grade teacher, Mrs. Bellamy. This time, I saw a young boy that I played with at the age of 5 named David. This time, I saw my brother. And I was welcomed by my immediate family. And as I went through this corridor, I began to see these codes, quantum physics. Don't ask me how, but I understood everything mathematical that I was being presented in this corridor. 222, 333, 444, 999, 000.111.00.11.00.11.0. And these mathematical codes were all around me in this corridor, in this tunnel, in this bullseye. And what happened as I'm going through this tunnel, I'm comprehending all these mathematical codes, understanding everything. And as I'm continuing down this corridor, there's this thing called collective intelligence, collective consciousness. And I could tap into what I call the earthly intelligence. Imagine the mind of Einstein and Tesla. Imagine the mind of your history teacher in high school, your college professor. I was able to tap into the collective consciousness, the collective intelligence, and I could see and hear and understand everything in a flash of a moment. It all made sense. I understood. And as I continue down this corridor, it's now time for the life review. I ended up in this tree, this huge tree, and there was this advanced being, I'll just say. And I got the chance to see my life review, and the most incredible thing that happened to me, and in a matter of 0 to 60, that's how fast the life review presented itself. But I got every moment of it. From the time I was a small baby being delivered until the time I died on that operating table on November the 11th at 11:11 p.m. I got it all. Every moment in my life, every failed relationship, every deed that I did or didn't do, I saw it in my life review. Over and over and over, I saw. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to highlight some of the things that I share in the book, but I also want you to hear these stories because they, to me, are very personal. But at the age of 5, I was forbidden to play with a young boy named David. My family lived next door to an Hispanic family, and they felt that it wasn't wise for our family to basically, or to have their children play with each other's family. So they just kept us apart. As a child, this is what I identify. I knew at the age of 5 the difference between right and wrong. I'm looking at my life review, and even at this moment, I'm looking down at that moment and realizing I did the right thing because it was the right thing to do. And it wasn't about my mother or my father saying I could or could not do this, but it was about my friend David. And as children, we don't look at things that way. We look at love. We look at kindness. We look at playtime. We look at our best friend, and that's what we see, not their judgments. So I'm looking at this, and I see that I'm scolded by my parents. And I'm sitting there, not saying anything, because again, I stutter, so I didn't say much when I was growing up. And I remember the next day, looking down at this, I got up, it's the summertime, I opened up the window, my brother said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to go play with David, you better not. And I crawled out that window, and I went and played with David. And the reason why I bring this up is because I look at that moment in my life as children, everything is recorded. There is this matrix, every moment, every little thing that you think you've forgotten about is there. Looking down at that moment in my life, I remember it's not that I defied my parents, but that my parents' judgment on this young boy was wrong, and I knew that. I take you forward into high school, sophomore, my birthday. And next to me is my sister, and she's saying to me, today's your birthday, why don't you tell me, you know, how much you love me and tell me that I'm your best friend. And I'm looking down at this, and I'm not saying anything. Come on, come on, tell me you love me. Come on, come on, happy birthday, happy birthday. I'm not responding because I'm kind of embarrassed. I don't want anyone to know it's my birthday. I don't want my sister next to me at my locker. Hearing my thoughts in my head when she walked away. And that was the night that she was killed by a drunk driver on my birthday. How many times have we gone to bed with an argument with someone we love? A brother, a sister, a father, a wife, a husband, a best friend, or a boss, or a neighbor. I learned at that moment in my life, and to this day, because I have no family, you guys are my family. I've traveled all around this nation, and to me, when I come to this room, you are my brothers and sisters, because you've come here to listen to the story. You are my family. But I can say, as a family member to you guys, take the time. If it means you have to say you're sorry, do it. But take that moment in your life, because you know what? You can't take that moment back. I go back in further into my high school. I'm on the way to English class, late. And I'm seeing our football team bully a young boy by the name of Mikey. Now, back when I was going to school in high school, there was no special ed in terms of there was 1 hour of special ed, and then the young boys and girls who were mentally challenged went along with the rest of the kids. So I'm sitting here walking down, going to the annex to my English class, and I'm seeing Mikey being picked on, and he looks up at me, and I'm looking down at this review. Again, hear my thoughts. I don't have time to help him out. I'm late for Mr. McCoy's class. Hear my thoughts. I did not take the time to help Mikey. And I'm seeing this. A pass-by opportunity. How many times in life have we had that moment when we see something going on and we don't take the time or the moment to help that person? I'm seeing a lot of that take place now. I'm seeing a lot of that. Over and over and over. Life review, life review, life review of all these moments, the should-haves, the could-haves, and the would-haves that I didn't do, that I should have done, but I didn't do. I go back into my interview with CBS. 6 times I finally agreed to do the interview with CBS, and I'm rather cocky about it. I'm looking down in my car, driving over the bridge, music blaring. I take some gum from the console. I unwrap it, put the gum in my mouth, and I flick the silver wrapper out the window into the river. And in slow motion, I'm seeing the silver wrapper spin all the way down into the river. And I'm watching this wrapper go down the river, and as it's collecting other trash, takeout bags, McDonald's, Pepsi, I mean, you name it, just debris and toxin. That one silver wrapper went down and went with other trash all the way down the river, through the lakes, down to the ocean. And I remember as this wrapper is passing this chemical factory, I could see all the residue and the toxins and the chemicals coming off the refineries. And you could see that residue going into where this wrapper was. And for me, I go back to that moment when I look at that. And, you know, for those of us who had near-death experience, these moments, when we get up here and talk about this, we go back to that moment in that part of our transition. Everything we do on this planet has a reaction. I had a lady ask me something, and I think it was San Jose. Well, you know, all this stuff is happening all around the world, and what can I do? Well, you know what? It really does begin with consciousness, and it does begin with prayer if you happen to believe in prayer. You can make a difference in terms of how you perceive the planet. Everything you do affects someone else, and I saw that because what I saw was I saw children in the hospital, my gum wrapper and all the toxins and all the chemicals that were in the rivers, in the ocean, these kids were becoming ill. My one gum wrapper affected someone else's life. Over and over and over, I saw, and it's not that I murdered, and it's not like I robbed a bank. It's not like I did, was a terrible person, but I also saw myself not voting. I saw myself just not caring about anything. I cared about money. I cared about success. That meant the world to me. I was able, as though, like Dickens, you're sitting here looking at a Christmas carol, and every person that you come in contact is there for a reason. And I saw this over and over and over again. And as my life review played time after time after time, I could hear my thoughts. Now listen to what I'm saying. I could hear my thoughts. How many times when you're by yourself and you're having that committee that meets in your head, when you're having that conversation in your head, you hear your thoughts, that dialogue that goes back and forth? That's what I was hearing, but it was a stratosphere of my thoughts. I'm out here in this life review, and I'm in a tree, and I'm reviewing my life review as though I'm on this big, huge screen and looking at my life. Everything matters. Everything we do and say matters. And as I left my life review, I went to this place called the cleansing station, Bardo. For those of you who know, who are former Catholics, limbo, purgatory. I call it the cleansing station. I talk about this quite a bit in the book. The cleansing station. Your soul, your frequency, your energy, your essence, your spirit goes to a cleansing station. And this is where you get a chance. For those of us, there's this thing called choice. And I had a chance, even as a child, as a young boy, going to Catholic school, this whole Jesus thing and this whole God thing, it just didn't make sense to me. And as I'm sitting here in this stratosphere, there is this presence all around me, filled with love and compassion and kindness. It's the only way I can describe it. Just this love that's just, again, I'm not physical, I'm just spirit, I'm essence, but I could feel it everywhere, all around me, consumed me. And as I'm at this cleansing station, I could feel this presence behind me. And there is this light, and I call it the golden light. But I'm having this conversation with this golden light that is so bright, but it's talking to me, thought form. Do you want to go back? Do you want to go back? And I got a chance to look down on the planet, and I got a chance to see what mankind was doing to the planet. As though I was a zoom lens and I could go into our government and I could see what politicians were doing, laws that should not be passed, and the pharmaceutical companies and what they were doing, turning their eyes in another direction to make drugs to cure, but to basically to kill. Over and over, I saw these, and they're not just here in the United States of America, all around the world. I got a chance to see the animal kingdom and what mankind was doing, not only to the dogs and the cats and the lions and the dolphin, but just the unnecessary killing of the animal kingdom. And I remember looking at this and going, no. My heart at this time, I say my heart, my soul, my essence, was full of love and kindness and compassion. Do you want to go back? Do you want to go back? I got a chance to see war on this planet. I got a chance to see violence on this planet. I got to see so much of what mankind is doing to one another. And as I'm looking down at the planet, I uttered those words. This is not what God intended. Let me repeat that. This is not what God intended. My heart was so full of love and kindness. And I'm looking down and realizing, you know, we are an angry group of people on this planet who like to kill things. We like to shoot things. And I could see this. But at the same time, I saw something else. I saw teachers and firemen. I saw these, what I call the unsung hero. People you know nothing about on this planet. And not just the remote corners of the planet doing things to help the dying children, the war, the famine, all these things, the people that were showing up. The nurse, Betty Solomons, who did the right thing because it was the right thing to do. And that gave me hope. Do you want to go back? Do you want to go back? Yes. I got a chance to see what my life would become. I saw the medical mishaps. I saw the misdiagnosis over and over. I saw the struggles. I saw the abandonment. People not wanting anything to do with me. But I also saw myself traveling around the world and speaking about higher consciousness, about this particular subject. Do you want to go back? Yes. I was given a choice. And I want to say this because each and every one of us in this room is given a choice. The choice to be here tonight, Divine Spirit led you here. The choice to sit in this chair here, that's your choice. The choice to stay in a dysfunctional relationship, that is your choice. The choice to leave that relationship, that is your choice. Every day, every moment, we are given a choice. Your thoughts. You know when there is something wrong, and we know when there is something right. We know it. I remember coming back into my physical body. I didn't know at the time, but I was unconscious for 3 weeks. And during that time, and as I'm going back, I could see my friend Nora, who taught me numerology. While I was unconscious, she would come into the ICU. And today's lesson is the number one. It is ruled by Aries. And it's about leadership. It's about independence. And then the next day would be about Libra. And this is about peace. Over and over, she would teach me numerology while I was unconscious.
And I could see the doctors and the nurses tee-heeing and laughing at her. And my own doctor, Dr. Fisher, would say, "What are you doing?" She said, "I'm talking to Peter. He can't hear you." Yes, he can. Yes, he can. When I came back, the first thing I felt was the pain. Was just too overpowering. Even with the sedatives and the drugs they give me, the pain was unbearable. "Mr. Anthony," the doctor said, "you have Crohn's disease. And these lesions on your face, very rare, but it does happen. And you have tuberculosis. And unfortunately, you've lost a considerable amount of weight." I was at 89 pounds for almost 2 years. All the medications they were giving me, the high doses of prednisone, the sulfur drugs, you name it, every medication they gave me, I had a reaction they could not explain. To the point I lost movement in my leg. To the point I could not see. I lost my vision. It was blurry, in and out, in and out. When they got me out of the ICU, it was time for the recovery. I said to her, "It's not your time to go, Peter Anthony. That's what you said to me in the hallway." And she looked at me. I said, "The number one rule by Aries is about leadership." I went verbatim down the list of everything she taught me about numerology. It stayed with me. The second thing I did, I want numerology books. I want astrology books. I want anything that you can give me. Now, back then, we didn't have Google. We went to the library. I don't care what you have to do. I need books on anything spiritual. Now, I didn't know at the time there was this thing called near-death experience. I just knew that I had some weird experience on the other side, and I had a conversation with what I call the entity. I call it God today. And the doctors would come in, and, "Mr. Anthony, we don't know why you're having all these reactions to these medications. It's just inexplicable. We can't explain it, so we're going to change medications." It was horrible. The pain, I literally got off the morphine. I just said, "I'd rather get off this morphine and get off these medications." So what I would do, "Norm, when they come in to give me my medications, I'm going to put it in my mouth. I'm going to give you the cup. You watch me put it in." And I wean myself off these medications, slowly but surely. I said to her, "This is what I need. I want acidophilus. I want thistle. I want pure garlic. I want you to go and get aloe vera juice, pure aloe vera juice." I started self-diagnosing myself. I had no understanding of anything homeopathic. Certainly didn't believe in it. But that's what I did. And I began to consume large doses of garlic. And slowly but surely, I wean myself off. And again, the staph infection that I have on my face, I'm still scarred to this day, from here up into my hairline. They couldn't explain that. They couldn't understand why I was blurred. But I remember the doctor came in and said to me, "Mr. Anthony, we have to do another surgery." And I said, "No. Mr. Anthony, we cannot guarantee that if we do not do another surgery, we have to remove the other part of your colon. If we cannot do that, there's no guarantee. We're going to have to give you a colostomy. We can guarantee that you're going to survive. We need to do radiation." I said, "No." I said, "No." I knew that I could do this. Luckily enough, in my industry, I had a lot of contacts. And one of my celebrity clients, when I was able to walk again 3 months later, she took me to Santa Fe to a shaman Indian. Now, again, my judgment back then was a little cloudy. But I remember the shaman Indian walked out and there were hummingbirds all around him. And I thought, "What are you doing here, Peter? What are you doing here?" But I thought, "What do you have to lose?" This particular client said, "You know, I just lost my sister to brain cancer. I believe that he could have saved my sister's life." And her sister's death became a tabloid frenzy. So she brought me there. 5 days later, I stopped bleeding. My vision came back. And I was able to walk again. I cannot run. And I was a runner. I cannot run to this day, but I can walk. So my life was back into the real world of recovery. And at 89 pounds and a staph infection that would not go away, you can imagine the eyesore that I was, the ridicule that I got. And that wasn't important to me. You know what was important? I wanted someone to listen to me. I wanted someone to hear my story. What little bit of family I did have left, and I wasn't very much, left. Friends, gone. I went into complete isolation, but I stayed in books. Marion Williamson, The Course in Miracles, The Return to Love, Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life, Love, Medicine, Miracles. I basically put my life in books. I needed to find the answers. And I also began to study numerology. And what I would do when I went back to work, months and months later, I started doing secret readings on the side. No one knew that I did this. and I began to establish my reputation as a numerologist and an astrologer. Didn't charge. I just wanted to study. And the people were basically my experiments. Word got out that I was doing this. After years of recovery and in isolation, I got a phone call. This phone call changed my life. Homicide detective. Mr. Anthony, we understand that you're an expert in numerology, ancient numerology. I said, yes. We also understand that you have a special effects background. Is that correct? I said, yes. We're working on a homicide case here, and I need some help. We need to decipher some of these codes. And the victim that was murdered by a neighbor, and according to the crime scene report, the perpetrator shot and murdered the neighbor because he attempted to have sex with his son. And his father had lost his other son, who had been missing for 2 years, and was beside himself. When I arrived on the crime scene, days and days and days later, what turned out to be the victim actually turned out to be a serial killer. And thus my life began as a paranormal and homicide psychic detective. This is what I do today, as a producer, as a writer, working on a paranormal series as we speak. That one phone call changed everything. I got out of homicide because it was too grueling for me. But I landed a series called Sightings back in the 90s. And I traveled around the country as a psychic detective working and solving these unsolved mysteries, these crimes, these paranormal activity. My life changed from being turned away by friends and what little bit of family I had to becoming the youngest paranormal investigator in the United States. And I traveled around the country, around the world, working on homicide cases and working on paranormal cases. I had to make a decision between the news and sightings and other paranormal televisions. And at that time, reality TV was just beginning. I said goodbye to CBS. My life began to soar. The reason why I share this with you, it took exactly 7 years for me to process the near-death experience. Reading book after book after book, I had to stand in my truth despite the doctors, despite the therapists, despite I went to men and women of cloth, I went to rabbis, I went to priests, I went to preachers, you name it. I sought out so much medical advice, the experts, to help me understand what had happened. Again, I didn't know it was a near-death experience. All I knew is something happened to me when I was on the other side. I didn't identify it as heaven. I didn't know what it was. But all I knew was I had to find out. And book by book by book by book, my life began to make sense. I discovered my authentic purpose. And that, for me, was the clearing moment, the defining moment of my life, is each and every one of us in this room is here for an authentic purpose. I don't care if you're the teacher or the president. You are here for a reason. And I find throughout my travels that so many people, especially in the spiritual world, they want to serve, they want to do something, but they don't know how and they can't do it. Because their job and their family, and you do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. But it also starts right here in this thing called choice. I always say, get clear in your head. And if you are stuck in that moment of job and you want to cross over and do something spiritual and you want to really contribute to the metaphysical world or the spiritual world, love what you do until what you love comes along. I did. I traveled around the country writing this book for 9 years on sticky notes. I handed all these sticky notes into a typist that write this from page 1 to page 316. No one knew I was doing this. No one knew I was a paranormal investigator in terms of the CBS world. I just said I have to leave. I kept what I did as a paranormal investigator for my friends and who were seeing me. I kept this quiet. I kept my numerology quiet. Weekends only. Do not tell anyone that I'm doing this. So I remained closeted until 2007 with this book. But the turning point for me with this book wasn't the homicide detective. It wasn't sightings. It wasn't all the television shows I was doing talking about the near-death experience and how I was being publicly ridiculed at that time on national television for my near-death experience and numerology. I was to be a guest speaker at the World Trade Center on September 11th, Tuesday, 2001, Celebrity Endeavors. Everything that could have gone wrong that day to me to get to New York City to speak, the overturned truck, the flat tire, the prepaid ticket that wasn't taken care of, one fiasco after the next. When I went back, I thought, I have to call Michael and tell him I can't get the prepaid ticket. Everything was so screwed up. I said, I'm just going to work out. And I went to the gym and I was working out. I remember a friend came up to me and he said, you've got to see what's happening in New York. I said, what? I don't want to come. I watched those towers go down. And I was supposed to be 484, the World Trade Center, on Tuesday. And that's when I said to myself, you write this book. No matter what they say on national television about your near-death experience, no matter what they say about you, Morali, no matter what they say about you being a ghost chaser, it doesn't matter. What matters is your truth. And if this is your truth, then you do it because it is the right thing to do. I let someone else's opinion all my life matter more than my own opinion. I saw that in my review. Someone else's opinion mattered more. I didn't speak up. You got a yes or a no or a nod on the head. I came back talking. And even this book, for those who buy it, and I think there's someone here who did read the book, even the editors decided we can't put this in your near-death chapter because no one else has done this. No one else has talked about this in their near-death experience. No one's talked about the past lives. No one's talked about the stratosphere and the entity speaking to you. We can't do that. So they edited it. So last year I took the book off the market, and I put it back in, and I put all the 12 pages back in with this book that you'll read tonight. Because it was the right thing to do, and because it was the truth. So I'm here tonight to say to you guys, you're also here for a reason. And all of you have your own stories of why you're here, what brought you here to this evening to listen to me share my story. And I cannot thank you enough because I go back to what I said earlier. It was Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City, all I have were the first three chapters. We don't care. We want to hear it. This is a special place in my heart because your city welcomed me when no one else would. So for me to be here tonight and to look at all these faces and to look at Bill and to look at Bob and to look at Craig, these guys do an incredible job to bring speakers in every month from all over with their stories. There is something to this. A doctor said to me in Santa Barbara, it took 40 years for consciousness to catch up with you. And I'll share one last little note here. While I was on the other side, I bring this up for a reason. While I was given that choice, as I was going back into, I call it, this great planet called Earth, all around me, feminine consciousness. As I'm making this choice to jump back into, all around me, I can see these fragments of energy, golden energy, new souls coming in, old souls reincarnating and going back, who had made choices, who went to Bardo, went to the cleansing station, had made moments to say, I'm going back in this particular time in history to make a difference. And I, like the rest of them, was this gold fragment of energy, spirit, essence, that went back into my body. And I remember when I clicked back into my body, I felt being human again. The reason why I bring up feminine consciousness, because I knew in my life review, I saw when I wrote this book, I sent out query letters in the 90s, all the way up to 2007. This is what I said, that we will have a female house speaker, that feminine consciousness will make a difference on this planet. What I'm saying when I speak of feminine consciousness, it's about the rise of compassion and kindness and love. Not divisiveness, not there is no gay, black, straight, white, poor, wealthy on the other side. It is essence. It is spirit. And it is love. That's all there is. And so when you go back to your lives tonight, think about how you can make a difference. Because everything that you do on this planet, no matter where you are, whether it's taking place in China or whether it's taking place in Los Angeles or whether it's taking place in Moscow, it matters because of your consciousness. Our thoughts basically govern the world. It is our consciousness. And so go back to your thoughts. If you have a lot of commitment in your head, I always say, get at peace, get at peace, get at peace. When you're in a place called gratitude, when you're in a place of peace, your life works. But when you're in conflict, you're in mire, nothing works. So give that some thought. That's what I saw on the other side. So all of you in this room tonight, you are here to make a difference. No matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, no matter what time in life, whether you're 18 or whether you're 80, you're here to make a difference. God bless you. Thank you for coming tonight. Thank you for being the first city that welcomed me. And thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Hi, thank you. sharing your story. I was wondering, so often people that have had near-death experiences say that there's a theme to lives. Is that something that you...
The theme is love, compassion, and kindness. Every person that's crossed over, that's the first ingredient you hear about. How else can you describe that feeling? Well, the only way I can describe it, if you've ever gone to that magical place, the ocean, the mountain, and you're there at peace, and you just feel this wonderful sensation, multiply that 100 times, 100 times, 100 times of peace and love and compassion. That's the only thing I can tell you if there's a theme. And other than the life review, that everything that you do basically is there. Not for judgment. You see, that's the thing, too. There is no judgment on the other side. There wasn't like, oh, Peter, you were wrong. You should have helped Mikey out. There wasn't that. It was like this feeling of, how can I be a better person? That's what I came back with. How can I help? How can I be of service? That is my theme, what I learned on the other side. How may I be of service? And funny, now I'm traveling around being of service.
I had a quick question. When you started your experience, you mentioned that you were being drawn up and you could see into this funnel-like
thing. Yeah, I call it the bullseye.
Bullseye, right. And it's people that you described as people from your past lives.
Yeah.
Then you said you went up to the seventh floor. So like, I'm just curious,
what happened? You're having all these moments, like cut, edit, next scene. I'm sitting here looking at doctors, looking at the bullseye, looking at the previous lifetime. My mind is... You're trying to figure out, this is all new to me, what's going on here? And as I'm going down the corridor, again, I don't see me, but I feel me. So in terms of going back to that corridor and what I'm experiencing, as I said, it's just boom, 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 boom. Everything's happening like this, but you get every second of it. Does that help you out a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Did you see the Holocaust?
I talk about that in the book. I talk about World War I, World War II. Yes, I did. This is why it concerns me. We are headed in a direction that really frightens me. And having worked at CBS and ABC and been in television film for many, many years, it's necessary that we start changing our way of thinking. And I go back to what I just said. There is no black. There is no gay. There is no straight. There is no... It is spirit. There is essence. And within that essence is love and kindness. And that's why we're here. We're just housing these physical bodies to make a difference on this planet, in my opinion.
Did the people in the Holocaust choose to go on the AP version in Earth School? And will their souls be deeper and wiser?
Well, that's a very complicated question, and it's a very complicated answer, but I'm going to break it down. Collective choice. There are certain people who come in at this moment in terms of changing the clock in history, have to make a difference. And sometimes your contract, I go back to, as I said, those fragments, those energies, we're going back to make a difference. Every person who comes back into this planet has a choice. They have an authentic mission or purpose. I stuttered. I couldn't write. I wasn't a mathematician. My whole life changed while I was going to be a writer. That didn't make sense, but here I am. And I sat down and wrote a book with no help. So when we go back to that complicated question, what's happening here is that certain people are here to make a difference. Sometimes it's something tragic. We have to go to the higher place of consciousness. And that's kind of where we are right now. Higher learning, higher purpose, higher consciousness. Think of where we are in terms of the last 10 years. Our whole information system has changed. So I can't answer the way you're probably wanting that to be clarified. But what I can say to you is simply this. I got a chance to see souls on the planet whose lives were cut short, and who come back. And you're talking to someone who didn't believe in previous lifetimes. There's a book called The Journey of the Soul who talks about that. So when I read that paragraph, thank you for letting me see that, because it made sense. So this world is very complicated, and God, universe, spirit, entity is also very complicated, but the world itself is a simple ingredient. Love, kindness, and compassion. You have to, every day, stand up and be that. And sometimes, I've been scorned on national television for talking about this. Do you know what? You do it because it's the right thing to do. Back to your question, it's a very complicated question, and I tried my very best to give you a very simple answer, and I really would like to give that to you over there privately, because I don't want to turn the whole room into another direction, okay?
My question is, you talked about a cleansing station?
Yeah, Bordeaux, yeah.
Bordeaux?
Yeah, limbo, purgatory.
Oh, okay. That's the Catholic thing.
No, it wasn't the Catholic thing. You know, I called the cleansing station. Now, I go back to the Catholic thing because I go back into my Catholic teachings and I was like, I had a real hard time with a talking snake. I had a real hard time with the loaves of bread. Me, going back to that, it's like, this just doesn't make sense to me. Where are the talking snakes today? Like the dinosaurs, they're extinct. That's how my mind worked. I'm a very black and white, very logical left-brain person at that time. My consciousness at the time was gearing towards that. When I'm here at this cleansing station, you're there on the other side, and you, it's not like they go, there's a sign up, this is cleansing station. You just learn it in here, in here.
Right here.
Oh, okay, I'm away. I got to look you guys in the eyes, okay?
Okay.
So please don't mind me walking all over the place, because this is important to me. This is my favorite part.
Awesome.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so not sure if I interpreted what you said correctly. I thought I heard you say that you saw a feminine influence.
Yes.
And I wasn't sure whether you were referring to this on this earth or whether you were talking about the other realm that you were in.
It's a feminine consciousness. Now, I want to clarify this. Feminine consciousness. Now, we have a masculine, the yin and the yang, if you want to break it down like that. But the feminine consciousness basically relates to our softer side. And if you want to docu-log where we have changed, I mean, if you look at the superheroes of the 80s and the 90s and where we are today, we had Schwarzenegger, we had Bruce Willis, we had Stallone in the 80s, and then Tobey Maguire in the 90s. We began to soften our superheroes in terms of masculinity, and now our superheroes are what? Women? You see what I'm saying? Now, if you go back and see the change of our advertising and our film, go back in the 80s and you look at the Oprah Winfrey's, jumped up on board. The Mary Williamsons jumped up on board. The Cher's jumped up. The Madonna's. The consciousness began to change where the men were the highest paid in our industry, and that began to change. So if you take a look at where we're going in consciousness, what's happening right now, we are ready for a change in our entire world of consciousness. And what that means, it's not about women and men. It's about, we go back to that ingredient, that there is the softer side of our consciousness that needs to come forward. Lending our hand out and saying, we need to help here. This is about uniting and not dividing.
So you said that you now do forensic, I can't remember the
word. I'm a parallel investigator.
Yes. May I ask you, do you feel like you have like a spiritual gift that enables you to be able to?
Well, I don't know if it's a gift. I mean, think about what I do for a living here. Hi, honey, I have to go to the office today. It's a burden. I stopped doing homicide work because of what I was seeing. And again, how it's treated by detectives and the district attorneys, the police officers, the investigators. I'm coming in and, you know, you can't convict someone on a hunch or a psychic intuition. Convict someone on physical evidence. I would go into these crime scenes and I'm seeing as though I'm the person, the victim, that's being murdered. I have to step into that consciousness. So it's very grueling on the body. It's just as grueling for the homicide detectives to do what I'm doing. We're working on a series right now where we're finally doing something. We get the homicide detective's perspective and we get the psych perspective and we merge the two together. Evidence.
Just like the TV show Medium.
Medium's not, I'll give that. Probably the best one, the girl, I can't remember, Arquette. She was really very good. Actually, the best show to really learn about the other side is The Ghost Whisperer. That was an amazing, their segment producers did a really good job of researching.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
My question is,
yes, ma'am.
You talked about your life review, but you shared things where you felt that you hadn't shown up in a good way. Did you receive other...
I want to clarify that question. I saw myself where I should have been better. Because what we do in our thinking, we go back to that judgment. And there is no judgment on the other side. I want to get real clear on that. Because we as a society, we around the world live in judgment. There is no judgment.
Right and wrong,
okay.
And bad, yeah.
Yeah. So we go back to your question.
The question was, did you see things that you did that you feel really good about?
Yeah, I saw myself helping some homeless people. As I go back, I use David as an example, the young boy, did the right thing because it's the right thing. Yeah, there were a lot of that that I saw that I was doing, but there were also said there were just small little things. We go up there and we think, oh my God, there's this hell and we've done this. Growing up Catholic, you remember if you ate meat on Friday, you were going to hell, you know. Just all this manipulation in terms of God, and that's not what I saw on the other side. That's not what I saw. What I saw was the complete opposite.
But the life review was valuable to you.
The life review was the most amazing thing in my life because it, as I said, not only did I see what I didn't do or what I could have done, but also what I did, I saw I could make a difference.
So obviously, you know, your purpose in coming back was to share your experiences to inspire and help other people and to send that pure message of entity that you've explained. But as you've described that sense of love and light and that entity that you were with, how difficult was that to not stay? It was your choice.
When you see where I was at that time, I was a selfish person. Me, myself, and I. Now, we could blame being the orphan. We could blame all those things. I'm not going to go there. I was a loner. And I saw this completely 180-degree change in personality. You have to understand, too, I was an artist going in. I can't paint to this day. I can write. I stuttered. The idea of getting up in front of a crowd like this was terrifying to me. So that in itself, when I saw that, just that one part right there, that was that little nudge I needed to say, you know, you can do something now with your life. If there's a message here, you talk about that theme, we're all here. There is something in us, all of us, that we're here to do. Whatever that is, if we're a teacher, whether we're a nurse, you know, whether we're a writer, whether we're a producer, a paranormal investigator, there is something for all of us to do. If you don't know, ask. We don't ask enough. We beg and plead, we're in fear. No, no, no. How may I be of service? How may I be of service? Okay?
Thank you.
I have read about a couple of other people who have seen past lives, but right. Never anybody who saw those figures first. Why do you think they appeared to you first?
Thank you for asking that question. If you're the first person in a year and a half that's asked that question, I've been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for that question. All of us in this room have had a near-death experience. And let me explain to you why. Now, going in, I didn't believe in previous lifetimes. Going in, I didn't believe in any of that past lives. Got it? So if that be the case, and I now happen to believe that, we all, when we check out, we die. How many here have ever done past life regressions? Anyone? Raise your hand high. Past life regressions. So if you're seeing someone who's a really good past life regressionist, they take you back to that pivotal moment in your life, and usually it's that transition or that moment in your life where you see yourself looking down and you're going, oh my God. So what happened to me on the other side, as I was going towards the other side, I began to see these kings and queens and scribes and these amazing people that I had worked with. I was a black named in Clarence in 1607. I was a young girl in Arkansas, was running out and got into a snowstorm and died at the age of 6. I died in Dachau, in the concentration camp, gas chamber. I saw all these things as I began to do, as I said, I began to search and find out what is all this about. Why did I see all these people? Why did I recognize these people from a previous lifetime ago? It wasn't until I read that passage, Journey of the Soul, I thought, I got that answer. So back to the question. Yes, there are these previous lifetimes that when you, it's time for you to die, there's this thing called advanced soul. When you've died over and over and over. How many here are Cancer, Scorpio, or Pisces? Just raise your hand high. So this is the most intuitive sign of the zodiac. They've been here over and over, especially if you're a Pisces today and you're a woman today as a Pisces. You've lived over and over and over. You've seen every war, seen it all. And Pisces has come back with information. Sagittarius, at this point in time of our earthly cycle, is about higher learning, higher purpose, higher consciousness, higher road. We're in a whole shift of consciousness right now. And it's Pisces and the water signs and the Libras. When we think of that, the Sagittarius is to lift consciousness. The water signs here are the feelers, the emotional, the sensitives. And within that spectrum of all, if you believe in this, and I happen to now, these are the sensitive signs that are here to make. You're the counselors. You're the people that people come to. You're the person that knows something, right? You know something. You feel this doesn't feel right. The earth signs are the more practical side. We've that left brain. So as I said, so what I've learned as I've watched all this stuff, and I read book after book after book, I took this and it made sense to me. I took from Marianne Williams, and that made a lot of sense to me. I read The Peaceful Warrior. That made a lot of sense to me. The Course in Miracles, a lot of sense to me. And also, I'll say this, the Catholic Church, the rituals, every year I go off on November the 11th, and I have since 1988, and I go off, And I have from 11-11 to 11-29 where I celebrate my rebirth. And I go wherever on the planet, and it's called a solar return, and I go to Maui, or I go to England, or I go to Peru. And I go there, and all I do is do a gratitude list the entire time I'm there. How many have been of service? Thank you for this lecture. Thank you for Salt Lake City. Thank you for the woman who asked the question about. I make a list in my head, and I go off into the mountains, I go off to the water, and I do nothing else but offer myself as a vehicle on this planet to be used. And that's what I do. God time. Yes?
Why do you think they appeared to you first?
Because when they appeared to me, what I recognized were these great souls from previous lifetime who had impacted me. They were the first ones. I go into the book in detail about this relationship I had with my mother. This is what I saw when I was being born, looking down, and I was like, oh my God, I had been my mother's son twice, and there was a conflicted relationship. And as I'm looking at my life review and I'm seeing this, goodness, I'm going to have a tough time with this woman now to be called mom. What I saw was my mom lifetime after lifetime after lifetime over here. So I don't want to get too much into the whole, because there's a whole other world we go into here. But what I've learned here in my perspective, from what I've, there are past lives. We're not here just once, and that's it. We're here many lifetimes. We live, we're matter, we make a difference. And if we don't get it down, then in the next lifetime you come back and you have to do something else. That whole thing called karma. Not a judgment, not a balancing, not a payment or a punishing. I stuttered. I saw myself making fun of people who stuttered. So why I come back in this lifetime stuttering? And learn what it was like, kind of made fun of, right? So the balance point, not the conflict, but the balance point.
Based upon your experience, which of the U.S.'s or the world's churches or religions is the most accurate in terms of doctrine?
Okay, I'm about to blow you guys away. You ready? Man has put religion in categories. Think about what I've just said. Mankind has put religions in category. Now, I'll use the Catholic Church since I was brought up Catholic. This whole mortal sin of eating meat on Friday, well, oh, come on. There was this punishment, according to the Catholic Church, that if you did this, this, and this, then there was this thing called hell. What I learned on the other side, I didn't see hell. I didn't see this judgment God. What I saw was just God. Think about this. I'll break it down. When you have made a journey up to the top of the mountain, no matter what that journey, your whole life, we'll call it that, the struggles, the relationships, the disappointment, the job, career, when you get to the top of that mountain, when you see that vista point, your vista point is not any better than the person over here who's come on the east side. We see the same thing. Does that make sense? We all see the same thing. It's beautiful. And that's what God is all about. So in terms of me trying to categorize religion, I won't do that.
Well, the Bible says that God is love.
Right.
The Quran says God is the compassionate, the merciful. It's all the same.
You just said it's all the same. So what we're trying to do here, we're going back to category. Our religion is better than this religion over here. Look where we are right now in consciousness. Where we are right now in terms of our politics. You know what I'm saying? You know, we're trying to ban a certain religion. Do you think the God would want to do that?
No.
No. It's man who has edited the perfect teachings of all the religions according to that time of consciousness. Think about what I'm saying there. You have a box of Crayolas. You have a yellow, a red, a blue Crayola. They all basically produce color. And that's how I look at religion. Thank you. Again, I have to say, you all had choices coming here tonight. I so appreciate all of you for making the choice to come and listen to me share my interpretation. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being a part of that.